This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty, continuing our look at the problem of student debt. When students are in the middle of classes and reading and exams and papers and going through the process of getting that degree and trying for good grades, it's kind of hard to keep your eye on the horizon beyond the grind of daily classes. Thinking about the job search and post-grad classes and paying off those student loans, it's often just more than someone can handle. But then you graduate, and then you are smacked by the reality that it is payback time, even as you're trying to find a job in your field or go to grad school. Then what? Well, Amanda Page has been wrestling with this problem ever since graduating from the University of Michigan 9 years ago. Yep. Amanda, now you graduated with a degree in Egyptian archaeology and classical civilization.
Yes.
Okay, what drew you to that?
I started off in engineering, like a lot of people do, and found that it was not necessarily something that I was passionate about. I wasn't invested in it enough to deal with all of the boring classes that you have to take before you can take the fun classes. So freshman year, I remember being in Professor Sue Alcock's Intro to Field Archaeology class. And I was like, oh, I remember I could dig in the dirt and play with old things. And I'm really passionate about this. And this is cool. This is what I want to do. So I was like, I'm dropping out of engineering and going to LSNA. And I'm going to go play in the dirt for the rest of my life. And had these grand romantic ideas of field archaeology and being a professor and all these wonderful things. And yeah.
And it's 9 years later.
Yes.
And what's happened?
I started college in 96. And in 99, I fell in love and got married and got pregnant. And then things sort of fell apart.
Okay.
And so I left school and went into the real world, as it were, and couldn't find a job in the field.
Yeah.
So I started in just wherever I could get a job. And then that one ended. And then I went to another job. And then that one ended. And then went to another job. And one day woke up and was like, I really hate my job. I don't want to do a job for the rest of my life. I need to go back to school. So I sort of slogged through it and went back to school, worked full time, went to school full time, and was a mom full time. And worked through that, got through school, graduated, and yay. And now I've got these two degrees and I'm super smart and people are like, oh, that's so interesting. But there is not a lot of jobs in my field.
And the student debt's looming to the
student
tune of?
Student debt is looming to the tune of, I want to say about $60,000.
Okay, it's a lot of money.
It's a lot. It's a very daunting number to be faced with. And unfortunately, I did the ostrich approach to my student loan.
Which
and
was?
Sort of buried my head in sand.
Okay.
So time is accruing and payments were occasionally getting made, but not on a regular basis because I wasn't really making that much money at the time.
Can I ask how much a month your payment was for your loan?
Oh, I want to say it was maybe a couple $100. So it wasn't too terribly bad, but when you're making $9 an hour and trying to support a kid,
it is terribly bad.
It is terribly bad.
Sure.
So Underworld went out of business. And I started working for Automobile Magazine. And by that time, payments had sort of fallen off to the wayside. And they stopped sending me letters, so I stopped paying attention to them.
Okay.
And that's not a good sign when they stop sending you letters. But we'll get to that,
okay.
I'm sure.
All right.
So I worked for Automobile for a while. And then they changed hands. And I got laid off. So by the time I thought I was ready to start paying off my loans, that job ended in money dried up and default land was where I was building a home.
And then ultimately, you had career plans for your classical studies in Egyptian archaeology, but in order to move ahead, you needed higher, more degrees.
Exactly. You need to have at least a master's, preferably a PhD, in order to go into the field of academia anywhere, ever. And because I've defaulted, the federal government is like, we're not giving you any more money. So unless I can save up money, which is really hard, I can't pay for school anymore. So I can't go and get my master's.
It really does seem like a complete and total catch-22.
It is. It is very much a catch-22. And it's a, you're constantly playing catch-up and it's really difficult to get ahead.
And meanwhile, back at the lack of letters.
Yes, back at the lack of letters means that they go, okay, we're going to stop playing nice for you and we're going to put you into default status. And that is sort of the haunted graveyard of student debt. And once you go into default, they want to make it really easy for you to get out. They say, make 9 payments on time every month, and we'll take you out of default status. We won't erase your loans, but you'll get out of default status, and they'll try and help you more.
What does it mean to be in default status in terms of your everyday life and trying to just get through things?
In terms of your everyday life, your student loans are sort of that healthy debt, and my credit is wrecked. So that means that I can't get a credit card to help me with emergencies. I have to sort of operate on a generally mostly cash basis. I don't really have a savings to speak of because my job is great, does not pay the most. And I can't move up to that next pay scale because it's hard for employers to sort of justify paying the wages to somebody who just has a bachelor's.
What do you wish, looking back, that someone had told you about college and student loans before you embarked on all of this?
Before I embarked on all of this, I think I wish somebody had said, when you get your financial aid package, they're going to give you a lot more money than you necessarily need. A lot of it's probably going to be in loans. You don't have to take them all. That's what I wish somebody would have told me, is you don't have to take it all. You, as long as your tuition is covered and your expenses are covered, then don't get that big refund check because you're going to do something stupid because you're 18 and don't know any better. I wish someone had said you could probably be more aggressive in looking for scholarships. Scholarship planning does not end when you graduate from high school.
Amanda, thanks for sharing your story with
us
today.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
That was Amanda Page, wrestling with student debt ever since graduating from the University of Michigan 9 years ago. So we've heard how it's all too easy to graduate with that shiny new college degree and a crushing mountain of student debt. If parents have co-signed, sometimes that debt comes due just as the parents are looking at retirement. And suddenly they may have a huge financial challenge in having to pay off their child's school debt. At the same time, studies have proven that across the country, the top income earners are, in nearly every case, college educated. So, what should parents and college students do to help boost that student's chance of graduating without crushing student loans? Could it be possible to get through college without encouraging big loans that need to be paid back? Joining us now is Detroit Free Press financial columnist Susan Tompor and also Pam Fowler. She's the Executive Director of Financial Aid at the University of Michigan. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Susan, I want to start with you because I know you have been sounding the drumbeat of warning to parents and college students in the pages of the Free Press with your columns. Just how have we gotten to the point where you see students struggling with $60,000, $80,000, $100,000 in student debt?
Well, I think one of the ways we get to this point, and we talk about this $1 trillion mark, that's really been the headline that's giving everybody a headache, really, $1 trillion in student loan debt. And when you talk to people, some of the problems that arise is actually students don't keep track of how much they're borrowing. There's a big concern, you know, when you go out and buy a car, one of the first things a borrower is going to ask is, what's my monthly payment? That's not how it's structured when you go out and take on student loan debt. People don't, you know, run through the numbers or understand, well, is this going to be a $90 a month payment? Is this going to be a $300 a month payment? You know, where am I going with this? And that is so important to keep track of those loans. And there's a difference between private loans and federal loans. And some people do not understand the advantage of a federal loan, which, you know, there are more caps on rates and some better repayment plans on some of those federal loans. You know, they kind of mix them up and they don't know what they have. So I think that's where we get started. And I also think part of the issue is, you know, everyone thinks you need a degree. And that, you know, it's important, but what degree are you going to get? Is this going to be, you know, from what school? What are you going to study? Where are you borrowing it from? And I like to think about that monthly payment. And there's some more calculators online really to research, you know, what are we going to do here? Where are we going to end up?
Pam Fowler, as Executive Director of Financial Aid at U of M, what's your take on this?
Well, I agree that students don't keep track. Financial aid officers go out of their way to give students the tools that they need to do that. But I think it starts earlier, as Susan was saying, is where the degree is going to come from, what type of degree, how long it's going to take to get that degree. Students used to graduate in 4 years. They don't graduate in 4 years any longer. We calculate, because the government requires us to do so, a six-year graduation rate. Well, one certainly borrows a lot more in 6 years than you do in 4 years. So you need to, at the onset, regardless of what institution you enroll in, try to get out in 4 years. And that may limit your course of study or your other options. Sometimes we send students mixed messages. The financial aid office is saying, get out in a hurry so that you limit your borrowing. But the academic side may be saying you need to take advantage of this, and this, study abroad, dual majors, expanded degree studies, and that kind of thing, not realizing that they're encouraging the student to incur more debt. By the time the student comes to the institution, planning is probably, it's a little late to plan to go to school. So you have to see if there's something you can do at that late stage of the game to limit debt. And in most cases, there's not.
And really, is some of this just our era? I mean, we are really in an era where parents are starting looking for the top school, even in preschool.
That's correct.
Do you both see that?
I think some of it is our era, and maybe we don't look at our income limitations as much, because we do pretty much all understand that an education is important. No one, I think, would disagree with that. But the key question is, what are you going to pay, and, you know, how can you defer some of those costs? Another thing people get confused in is, you know, this idea of applying to the better schools. And some people are confused when they get these acceptance notes. They might not understand if this is a loan or if it's a grant, or maybe sometimes what the experts have been telling me is some schools may front load some of these benefits. So maybe in the first year, you may get more aid that is not have to be repaid back, you know, in a form that's not a loan.
Ah.
But so you think, oh, I'll get that in the second year. Maybe not. Maybe the school front loads a lot of the benefits, and the second year you're going to end up borrowing more. I've talked to parents who face that consideration. So here you are at the school. You made the choice. Yes, we think we can do this, but the second year your financial aid isn't nearly as great.
We just ran our interview with Amanda, who loved her Egyptian archaeology and classical studies classes at U of M and graduated 9 years ago, more than $60,000 in debt, wound up defaulting on her loans, and cannot pay for the master's and the doctorate level degrees that she needs to continue in her field. She started in engineering and found it unfulfilling, didn't like it, loved the archaeology and classical studies, so there she went. One has to ask, is it a bad idea for someone to graduate with a major like archaeology? Should they be turning their backs on that?
Throw that to Pam.
I don't ever tell a student what they should or should not major in. I just point out the consequences of a major. And graduating from U of M with $60,000 in debt, I would think that she was a non-resident student when she came to Michigan, which means she paid much higher tuition. And we have this conversation in our office all the time with non-resident parents saying, we don't ever say you can't afford to come to Michigan, because
yes,
that doesn't sit well with families. But we will say perhaps you should consider a lower cost or an in-state alternative to our non-resident families. But once again, the student has always wanted to come to Michigan, and you know, and it's like, and so they divorce the practical decision from the emotional decision, and they go with the emotional decision. Now, there are options for students who have large amount of debt to keep their payments low. There are income-based repayment programs where, and under the current regulations, which just went into effect, if a student makes a monthly payment for 20 years, down from 25. The balance of the loan is forgiven, and it is based on 10% of one's discretionary income. So if I'm only working as a waitress and I have, say I had $10,000 in debt and I'm working as a waitress, I only have to pay what the formula says my income will allow me to pay. So I don't go into default. I continue to make my payments, and, you know, life isn't as good as it could have been, but it's not in default and bad credit and all those things that go along with that.
And Susan, you spend much of your space in the Free Press as you write columns about student debt just over and over saying, do not default. And the reason is?
The reason is you run up, the worst side of it is you can get run into some bad legal consequences. You know, they are taking people to court on some of these cases, and it really becomes a huge problem. But on the other side, you might not be able to get a cell phone plan, a rent, signing up for utilities. These are all problems that you're going to have, you know, with daily living. It goes on your credit report. It's a big issue. One of the things that, you know, we were talking about, what major? Some people give guidelines as to what's the salary. Think about what, you know, if I'm going to be making $40,000 a year, why would I borrow $100,000, right?
Right.
So start thinking in guidelines, what does the salary traditionally pay and how much do I need to borrow and how would that be doable? And there are some good programs now on these income-based repayment. I went online and looked at the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and there's a little bit of a nice step-by-step plan that parents and students can look at. It's www.cfpb.gov, and it really talks in a very simple manner, asking you to look at whether your loans are federal or private, and asking how much do you think, you know, are you going to have trouble making the monthly payments? And it kind of walks you in step by step. They talk about the income-based repayment plan. They list some examples. One example was if your income was $35,000 and you had three members in the family, it could break it down to $90 a month on a payment. So there are some different programs. Again, federal is better, so that's always the best. If you've got federal, take those loans out first. You do have to look into these things and talk to your servicer and see what options are out there. And if there's true economic hardship, say you don't have a job, there's deferment programs, forbearances. You know, there are different programs to avoid the default. The default is probably the worst thing you could do. You don't want to, you know, say, oh, I can't make the payment. That's it. I'm done. I'm not going to contact anybody.
Pam?
Well, if you get to that point, and you don't want to contact the lender because you can't make the payments, then contact the school, and hopefully someone in the financial aid office can talk to you about your options and put you in contact with either the federal servicer or the private lender who can help you get back on track. And it is possible to rehabilitate a defaulted loan, but you have to make nine consecutive monthly payments on time and that kind of thing. But it's much better not to get to that position in the first place.
It's been great talking with both of you. Really appreciate your assistance. And Susan Tomper, who, of course, is the Detroit Free Press personal financial columnist, and Pam Fowler, Executive Director of Financial Aid at the University of Michigan. Thanks for talking with us
You're
today.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
And we've put a link to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau on our website. Just go to michiganradio.org.